Can I just start with that, just at that point for a second? Hello, Jim. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for asking.
You must be thrilled, first of all, that finally you're going to get a chance to play these tunes and get on the road, and because you don't wait around well. You want to get going, right?
That's exactly right. I've never had this January off stuff. I mean, usually, you know, we're out at the beginning of January, and records out in the fall, and we do all this, and then we get touring. So this is a little different, and no, I have not waited very patiently, but it has also been good time. I mean, I have a lot to coordinate, trying to figure out how to work in Barney and Devin and Sam, my two sons. And so it's been okay. It's just, you know, trying to keep the skills up, rehearsing instead of actually playing.
I want to listen. They nicely sent me the cover of the album. That's great. What I really want is the back. I want to see who wrote what. And so help me through that. Did you do some co-writing with this?
No. All songs written by JC.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
That's the drill. That is the solo project drill.
Do you find some tunes cause more problems than others? In other words, you get halfway through, you don't know where the bridge is or the middle eight or how to finish it?
I think that what happens is I start out writing and I, you know, it seems easy. I get started. I know what I'm going to write about. And then I realize I got to write a whole record, not a half a record, like my body and mind are used to. That's a little daunting feeling in the middle. But no, ultimately I get enough songs going, and if I have trouble with one, I just move to another. I really, really did not want to waste any lyrics on this one. I wanted to make every lyric count. I realized that my opportunities to do solo records are infrequent, and I don't know how much I have left in me, so I really wanted to make this one count. I had a lot of things I wanted to write about. And so I just labored, but it was labor of love, because I had a very clear objective.
These songs feel like, I haven't lived them as you have, but they do feel lived in. It feels like these are things that have happened to you, paths that you've crossed and thoughts that you've had. I mean, because sometimes you can write easily. You just finish the sentence. You have nothing to do with it, but it works within the song. But I get the feeling that that you avoided that.
These songs are pretty much what have been going through my mind for the last year and a half. I knew once the Blue Rodeo, the last Blue Rodeo record, Thousand Arms, was done, that I could make a solo record next.
Right.
So, and then a lot happened, you know. I mean, things are changing. Blue Rodeo, the nature of Blue Rodeo is changing. I lost a big event last year. I lost a friend last year. You know, John Mann, Gord Downie.
Yeah.
There's a lot of turmoil has happened in the last year in my life personally, and then my life in the bigger sense. And so there was a lot to write about. And I think it was also to honor those subjects, just to make it count. And I think that there's, you know, somebody remarked that there's a lot of loss on the record. And I agree, there is a lot of loss on the record. Some is maybe different than people think, but it is my time of life. I mean, that's what happens. You know, when you get to be over 60, you start to lose things.
Oh, easy
now. But there's also on the record, I think, as a balance, and I didn't do this consciously, but I just upon reflection, I realized there's a lot about the constancy of love as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's sort of the balance to loss. You think, well, this, I've had this love and this relationship with this person all the way through this, and God forbid we ever lose that, but there's no signs of that. That seems, you know, that's the Rock of Gibraltar. So there's a number of those songs on the record, too.
Jim Cuddy's on the line, of course, and I thank him for that. This is Mulligan Stew, CKUA. This is The Stew on Roundhouse Radio. 98.3 Vancouver. I'm Terry David Mulligan. The album is called, this is his fourth solo album. He's just starting his career. It's called Constellation, and it's such a, it just pounded my heart. Waiting for a sign from you. I've had the same thoughts about people that I've lost in my life.
Yeah.
And I assume that's the root of this song.
That is the root of the song. However, that song had a very specific purpose, and that was to also embed some humor. There's nothing you can, I mean, once you've lost a few people, you realize there's nothing you can do. They're just gone, and you just have to live with it. But you are left with these very particular memories, and that one is, so that's a friend of mine. He was very ill in the fall, but he was okay. You know, he was going through his treatments, and well, we all knew that it was not going to cure him. So we went up to my farm. He was very instrumental in us getting our little farm, our little country place, because that's where he's from, and grabbed a couple of his friends on the way up, and we had an epic night. I made this big dinner, which was also great that he could eat. And then upon his encouragement, truly his encouragement, because we were all following his lead, we drank so much. Oh, my God. we just countless bottles of wine. We were kind of pleading with him on the last one. We can't drink anymore. Anyway, we had decided in a bit of a maudlin moment that we would go outside and name a star after him, and that we would always remember this after he was gone. Thought we'd make it easy on ourselves. My place is very open. You can see all the stars. We'd just do a last star in the handle of the Big Dipper. Easy. We get out on the lawn, the four of us, and we're so inebriated, we cannot find the Big Dipper. Like, truly, can't find the Big Dipper. Can't distinguish it in the sky. We're walking all around the house. We're turning around. And eventually, we're just laughing at the folly of four idiots, can't, you know, trying to do this sentimental thing and not even coming close to being able to do it. And I have wonderful pictures of that, not just real pictures, but pictures in my mind. And I put that in the song because I'm going to sing this song a lot, and I don't want it to just be about losing my friend. I want it to be about him being alive. And I think there's a lot that sort of saves you when you lose somebody, is the vividness of the memories of when they were alive.
From the album Constellation, this is Constellation, the Jim Cuddy Band. When I play that, Jim, Constellation, I immediately think of Gord Downie. Mm-hmm. Did you get to say everything you wanted to say to him?
I saw Gord a few times in the final 6 months, but mostly we were occasional texters.
Yep.
And you know, when I text him from the road and just say I'm thinking about him, we're doing this and that, and then he'd send back and some reflection. And he was very, as you can imagine, he was a very reflective texter. So they're all very significant. That was a big deal for me after he passed, was how do I archive these? I didn't know my phone well enough to archive all of his texts. But that was mostly, and of course I was, you know, see people that he worked with all the time, Josh Finlayson, and I see Kevin Drew every so often. So I knew what he was doing and where he was working. And still, like everybody else, except maybe his family, I was shocked when he went. I just thought, how does a guy go 2 weeks from doing recordings to passing? It's just, anyway, it was shocking, and it was inspiring to watch the whole nation mourn and how much he meant to everybody. But it was still shocking.
Jim Cuddy's with us. This is The Stew. I'm Terry David Mulligan. We'll talk about the tour in just a moment, which is heroic. It's 33 dates, for God's sake.
Got to get up to 35. 33 is just not a right.
And we will touch on, let's touch on John Mann for just a moment if we can.
Yeah.
There's a recording of the Spirit of the West song, Home for a Rest, that mm-hmm. was done at the Commodore Ballroom. It's the last place I saw you and talked to you. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. What a night.
Yeah, what a night. It was incredible. I mean, about the recording, it's amazing that Alan did that. Alan has really the energy of 10 men. And he set all this recording set of stuff up in the bathroom, and he just, you know, talked people into walking with him, and you'd go do your thing. And I must admit, just from my own personal point of view, when I heard it back, I've got the first verse. I thought, I sang that just like John Mann. I don't sound like myself. I sound like John, like I'm imitating him. But I guess he was there, John was there throughout the sound check, which was basically a rehearsal, and obviously the evening. And he, you know, he's certainly at the point in his disease where you're not sure whether he knows who you are, and you're not sure whether he's going to be verbal with you or not. Sometimes sure. he is, sometimes not. But boy, was he ever incredibly in tune with the music yep. on stage all night, and his rhythmic sense was spot on. I mean, he's a very strong presence, and so it's something that that night and other nights I've had with John, they have a huge impact on me. It takes me weeks to get over it, because there's the mysteries of the mind are so profound. I don't know what's going on in John's mind, and I don't know what he's perceiving and what he feels, and yet he seems present and then not present, and he has all these devoted people in his life, Jill and his beautiful sure. daughter. It's a very moving night. So you get through the night, and then the next day I just am befuddled by trying to figure out what is it that, what are the functions of the human mind? They are beyond our grasp.
And the human heart.
And the human heart, we know.
So let me play that tune, okay? Because it was done in the men's washroom at the Commodore Ballroom not too long ago by Alan Doyle and his gang of thieves. This is Home for a Rest for John Mann. We're talking with Jim Cuddy. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Mulligan Stew. A couple of things here, because I now have to go into my speed round. Have you met Dan Mangan?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. We were talking about found material. He's been drawn into film scoring, which is a painstaking process.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with not what you want from the song, but what they want from the song, from the music for their film. And a lot of it gets, or some of it gets rejected. He says, it's cool. All of a sudden I have a fully formed song that I can put on my next album.
Yeah.
And so I know that you had that year to write these songs and record them and whatever. Where do you store away those nuggets?
Well, I've had a little bit of the film scoring opportunity, and that was Gunless, I think, was the Paul Gross movie, and we were asked to do that and went in and saw it, and I realized after seeing the movie, as good as it was, it just didn't fire anything in me, and it truly fired something in Greg, and Greg did a great soundtrack, but I couldn't do it at all. I thought I can't. This is hours and hours of work, and I'm not inspired to do it. But he did write a few things for it, and they were rejected. And I don't think by Greg, but certainly by the directors. And I ended up, those were on my last solo record, and they were little gems. They were great. They were just, sometimes they were little 30-second or 1-minute pieces. And that was a great thing. It was a great thing to have those bits, and they were thoughts more than full stories. But in terms of my solo record, except that one, because I had that little scoring. And then I have also had some experience. I scored one of my wife's short films, and that was great, because I saw it and I thought, I know exactly what to do.
Sure.
And those songs also ended up on my last record.
Okay.
Maybe I didn't write a lot for my last record. But this time I just wrote for this record. I knew when I was free of my Blue Rodeo responsibilities, sat down and started writing. And I knew I wasn't going to write like 100 songs. I wrote, a bunch. But I'm now a voice recorder on my phone store.
Sure.
And then I take all those to the studio, and then I do it on one of those cassette recorders. I can't remember what we used to call the blasters, ghetto blasters. Probably not a very appropriate title, but
not now.
But it's the one with the two cassettes, and then I just go back and forth recording myself over and over until it's all so blurry you can't find it anymore. But that's my process, and that really works well for me. I can just take a nugget of a song and work it back and forth, play guitar, play piano, do whatever I want on it, put a lot of harmonies on it, and then I have what to other people is just a sort of a mess, but I understand what's in there and how it's going to be a song. So that's pretty much what I did this time too.
Okay, Jim, I'm looking at these titles here, and for me to go down this list is goofy because I'll lose you. Perhaps I could ask you a question about which songs wrote themselves, or which songs surprised you in their conclusion.
Well, that's a good one. That's a good question. I've never been asked that before. I think that Constellation wrote itself quickly.
Okay.
Constellations. Constellations wrote itself quickly. I really, that was very fertile ground for me, because I first of all, I wanted to sing it at his wake. We had a little wake after, and But it was easy to write because I knew exactly how I felt about the loss, and I also knew that I wanted to embed this humor. Another one that was easy to write was Cold, Cold Wind.
Oh, I love that song, Jim.
I get really, you know, every so often I listen to Beggar's Banquet or one of those records, and I just so smitten with the, you know, other people doing kind of American bluesy stuff. And I also wanted to write a song about how indifferent fate was to humans. Mm. You know, I think that's what I was trying to say, is that you just tell your troubles to the cold, cold wind, because no one cares. And that one just was a little memory song, and it was easy. And also, it was just in terms of recording, I had these, you know, I have these, Colin Crisp is an amazing guitar player, and Jimmy Boskill's been playing with us and playing with Blue Rodeo and Sheepdogs and everything. And I thought, I'm going to have a little guitar battle in the end. I'll just write a little piece that, you know, that'll fit in with it, and these guys can have it out. And that was an incredibly fun day in the studio. So those were two easy ones. Difficult one, I would say Hands on the Glass was a little difficult. I tried to have some political overtones about, it's pretty hard to have what's going on in the United States go on and not comment on it.
Sure.
And I did, you know, the rest of the record's very personal, but I had to make some comment. And I had this image of, you know, your hands on the glass and looking at things. It seems to me there's such a sense of containment in that image, where you're being separated by the action of the world by glass. In this case, it was the glass of a train, but everything's going on, and you can't touch it, yell at it, you can't affect it. And then just about how constancy of faith in each other is all we got left. And so that was a difficult one to finish. I didn't really know where that was going.
Hmm. I wrote underneath that, Hands on the Glass, I wrote your sound. I don't think I've ever asked you this, to explain the difference between your sound, your audio sound in the studio and your vocals, and the Blue Rodeo you.
Sonically, I guess I have a little bit more. I have the final say on how I sound, and I sort of am true to my roots. That one, the Hands on the Glass, I wanted it to sound like blurry acoustic. I wanted the acoustics to be sort of blown up and be sort of fuzzy at the edge, and I wanted my voice to do that too. Then something like Consolation, I wanted my voice to be crystal clear. Basically using the same mic all the way through the record, but that's just Tim Vesely,
yep,
twiddling the knobs. I think the difference would be that would be put up for some kind of democratic decision in Blue Rodeo, if I really cared, I could say, no, I want it like this, but it would be, everyone would suggest. I don't know where it would end up, but it might not end up being exactly what I wanted.
Where did While I Was Waiting come from?
Oh, While I Was Waiting, you know, that was written as supposed to be a duet. It was supposed to be, and I've been criticized for it being so judgmental, but that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be about how inappropriate everybody is until you find the one that's right. And you can make such small excuses. It was supposed to be sung with Oh Susanna. She was supposed to do the second verse. You should have seen the ones that came around, like they're picking through the lost and found. And that one was supposed to, I thought it was funny that she would say, they stumble through the door, say they're feeling kind of shy, then tell me their life story, man, I could have died. You know, this idea of going on a blind date, whatever, and somebody just starts talking about themselves and they never stop. So I thought that was funny. I didn't expect that I'd be saying it, but it came from, you know, when I met my wife, I didn't know it would work out, but I certainly knew how I felt about her.
Sure.
From the moment I saw her. And I had been on I'd had lots of other amours, and they'd been really, really nice girls, but just something wasn't right. So that's where it came from.
Okay. Jim Cuddy is with us. The new album is called Constellation. And, or is it S? Is there an S in there?
No, it's Constellation is the record. Constellations is the song.
Yeah, thanks.
I don't know why
I
can't remember.
No, really, thanks for doing that. Anyway, the album is called Constellation. Now, the tour, 33 dates. But I love the fact that Barney's there with you, because...
Yes.
because you are two good souls together, and your voices work well. You know your songs. You can count on harmony if you need harmony. You can step out when he steps out. You got Devin and Sam, your sons out there. This is a fantastic tour.
Well, this is, you know, the more you do this, the more you realize I can do whatever I want. It doesn't seem like that at the beginning. It seems like you should do what everybody else is telling you to. Barney and I have always talked about working together, and it just was too, it wasn't right, and it wasn't right with Blue Rodeo, and he wouldn't get enough. So we talked about it this summer and said, Barney, this is what it would be, and believe me, it's not going to be about the money, and it's not going to be about the time on stage, and we're all going to be crammed in the same bus. Like, this doesn't have the economics of a Blue Rodeo tour. And I'd like to take my sons, and I'd like you all to be featured performers. I'd like to go out like a review, like the Tamala review, you know, where there'd be a solid band, and then people come up and do their song and go away and come back. And it is working out. We haven't done a date yet, but I certainly have been working hard on the set, and I want to make sure that the three of them feel like they are respected featured artists. We can present the family band at the end, and Barney and my sons and I, we've done that a lot because we've done a lot of charity trips together. But I want them to feel like they're first of all being presented as solitary respected artists.
Are you saying that they're going to get full lights and sound?
They're going to play with my band.
Yeah, good.
I should diminish the lights when they come up, right?
And you did do gold medal plate trips with them, and sang in courtyards and things, right? Around pianos.
This is where the whole thing was fostered, was on charity trips where we provide the music for trips that people pay for to raise money for Olympic athletes.
Sure.
And so we've done a lot of playing, and we've done a lot of playing in unusual settings, as you said, courtyards, hotel bars, backs of tour buses, all kinds of stuff. And we have a very easy musical relationship now. And now it's just a question of making sure I do the right thing with them on stage.
Okay.
And my band's fantastic. I mean, of course. You know, they're going to have a great backing band.
Okay, I'm going to lose you in a second here, so I'm going to do these quickly. Hold on a second.
Okay.
So tour dates, you're going to start, by the way, this is Saturday. So your album came out yesterday. Congratulations. Yeah. You're
Thank
off
you.
And running. February the 8th, St. John's, New Brunswick. Great. That's a great place to start.
Yeah.
I noticed that, and well done for booking yourself into Massey Hall on Valentine's Day. So you get two things done on the same day.
The last Valentine's Day. Somebody came up to me the other day and said, thank you for making Valentine's Day presents so easy.
February the 22nd at the Vogue. You love that room, and the room loves you. The 23rd in Victoria, the 26th in Chilliwack, and then it's the 28th in Edmonton at the Northern Alberta Jube, the March the 1st in Calgary at the Southern Alberta, the 2nd in Banff at the Eric Harvey, yes, and the 4th at Medicine Hat at the Esplanade Theatre, and I would imagine that Leroy Stagger will be there somewhere.
I hope so. That's a good, lad.
Tell me about here at Tasting Room Radio. Tell me about Cuddy by Taz. How are we doing?
Oh, it's doing well. I think it's a lot of it sold out. I think we have a new run of the Cab Blend, the Cab Franc Blend,
right.
And we have a new run of Chardonnay. And then I have a sparkling wine coming out in the spring.
Wow!
Yeah, I'm expanding.
It's off and running. In other words, this is year two, three, something
this
like
year,
that.
No, this is year two. I guess it'll be year three by the time. I guess we're into year three, you're right.
Do you like being in the wine business?
I do. I'd like to get more into the wine business. But I do. I like it. I mean, there's nothing that I don't like about wine. I like where it's grown. I like the beauty of it. I like what it provides people. I like the wines that I'm associated with. I really like the people I'm associated with. Yeah, I like it all.
By the way, there's a nice confluence here, and I'll let you go. The donor for this hour is Stefan Berrill, Berrill. He's in Vancouver, and he has a film company called Brass Tacks. And when I mentioned to him that because somebody plunked down a lot of dough to donate to CKUA and the Stew. Very cool that Jim Cuddy is the guest on your show. I recently directed and produced a music video for Barney Bentall for one of the tunes off his album, and worked with the directors of the tune that Barney recorded with Jim for his new album, Won't Change the World. So there's a nice connection all the way around here.
Very nice. Very nice.
Thank you for your time, Jim. And way to go on the tunes. Really hard to talk about all of them because I need an hour, and we don't have it. It's going to do well. If you still care about outside opinions, it's just beautiful, fabulous work.
Well, I always care about your opinions.
Quote me on that one, okay?
That's very nice. Thank you very much, Terry. It's always nice talking to you.
All right, don't go away. Jim Cuddy. Okay. Jim Cuddy's the guy. The name of the album is Constellation. It's out now. Watch for the tour. Let's leave you with here's a great love song for you called One Thing Right. All right, I'm going to stop my roll here. Oh, a second.